Welcome to Challenge Your Thinking, where we invite you behind the scenes with in-depth conversations with thought leaders, entrepreneurs, athletes, risk takers, artists, and more who have each overcome something that may have held them or others back. I invite you to challenge your thinking and learn from these heroes, shakers, and makers about what moved them forward instead of being held back. I am your host, Dr. Linda Tucker, and I welcome you.
Life can knock you and pull the wool from over you, but you don't lose who you are. You don't lose what you know and your survival skills and your intelligence. And life can happen, and what you have left is who you are. And so I came into this world with nothing. I would leave with nothing. But what I did in the between time is what really mattered. And what I wanted to do is save hurting people.
Retired Air Force Staff Sergeant Alicia Watkins is a survivor of the 9/11 terrorist attacks at the Pentagon, who deployed to both the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and now battles traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, and post-traumatic stress. Alicia was the principal guest on the 25th final season of The Oprah Winfrey Show in the episode American War Heroes, Why Are These Women Homeless? She now proudly serves as an ambassador for veterans, traveling the world to speak on behalf of the needs of wounded warriors, female, and homeless veterans. She was nominated as L'Oreal's 2013 Woman of Worth for her 9/11 Empowerment Drive Foundation, which assists the survivors of 9/11 and wounded warriors as they recover from their injuries. Her goal, or I should say one of her goals, is to prevent the financial loss and pay errors that occurred to her as warriors recover from their combat injuries. Alicia is currently a sophomore at Harvard University with a goal to earn a doctorate in psychology and law. She is currently the reigning Ms. Maryland America, a certified volunteer docent for the 9/11 Memorial in New York, and she's mentored by famed horse whisperer and former guest of mine, Mr. Monty Roberts, who developed equine therapy. Alicia has been featured on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Australia's Seven Network, and the Oprah Winfrey Network. Additionally, she has appeared in The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Washington Times, The Boston Globe, Ebony Magazine, and too many numerous other publications to mention. Alicia Watkins, it is an honor to welcome you.
Wow. I honestly, at one point in my life, I thought that I was dreaming. This was one big dream. I think it was kind of after the Truman Show. I'm like, oh, this is what's happening to me. I'm the Truman Show, and one day I'll wake up. Or the screen will come down and all the actors will say, we were just playing. Your life is not that horrible. But thank you for having me. I really appreciate you.
Well, I truly am honored to have you here. So I have the sense that you have been a private person.
Yes.
someone who has either been taught to take care of herself or decided somewhere along the way that no one was going to help you other than you. Am I close?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that people really don't understand that about me. I think that if you look at a lot of the things that I've gone through, everything that I've gone through, especially my injuries and my homelessness, I kept that to myself. And I really tried to just forge ahead. And no matter what happened to me, just continue to function and to live this life. And part of that is from my training as a warrior, but just my family really instilled that into us. And my mom was always talking about, you have to do for yourself. No one will treat you better than you will, and no one will take care of you like you will. And I realized very early on in my life that the only person that I can depend on is me. And I just think that that's been a reoccurring, I guess, mantra in my life. So.
And talk about a place where you have to keep a stiff upper lip is certainly a life in the military.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I was in basic training, I was the dorm chief, which means I was the leader of all of the other pupils. And I'm 5'10". I stood over most of the men that were there. I have been a leader my whole life. And for me, in the job field that I was in, I was usually the only female. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to happen is for them to see me as weak or to see me as not cutting it because I usually was the only one. It was not until later that I was surrounded by other women who were also in the network engineer field and everything like that. But I just was determined not to be seen as the weaker gender.
You wanted to be treated as an equal.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were no excuses that I made. And it was a rough road, but I'm so glad standing in the place that I am now. I'm so glad that I had that type of mentality, even though it upsets a lot of people because they're saying, well, why didn't you tell us you were suffering from this? And why didn't you tell us you were suffering from that? But you have to look at the entire span of my life and see where all of this strength and all of this tenacity came from. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a taught and learned behavior. And I'm not the only one that deals with it or does it. I'm just the only one that is on the news.
So how did you decide to join the Air Force?
I decided to join the Air Force. I've always been a patriot. I'm one of those people who still cry during the Star Spangled Banner. I just love the United States. And I initially went into the Air Force for the college incentives. And I was like, yes, I get to go to college, get paid. And it's great because I don't have to pay all these loans when the government would pay them for me. And I was all set and everything was ready to happen for me when it came to college. But 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changed everything. And
didn't realize the price you'd have to pay.
Oh, no, I did not. And no one did. Until 9/11, I think that we all had our different reasons for joining the military, but none of them involved, hey, I want to give my life.
So have you ever regretted the decision to join?
No. I've never regretted. I have had a horrible career. From the moment I joined the military to the moment that I was retired, I believe I haven't found anyone, even my warriors that have severe limb and amputations, they have more of a life than I think I did. And so I always say that I have a horrible military career, but I would do it all over again because of what it has done for me, what it's done for my testimony, what it's done for the legacy that I want to leave on this earth. And my goal is to help someone who is suffering. I'm so thankful for the opportunity to have served my country. And one of the things that I do now when I'm trying to recruit people to the military is that I tell them, my life and my military career, you will never go through all the things that I went through in the military, but all in the same, I still would choose it again. And I would have suffered again, and I would have gone through everything that I went through again. That's how beautiful and honorable it is to serve your country and to be part of something. And in my case, to be a part of history the way that I am. I mean, I have a 9/11 statue in Florida. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
So clearly you're describing, you know, certainly a lot of circumstances that haven't been easy. I mean, the injuries that I read. And yet it sounds as if these obstacles or struggles that have been in your life, which I hope, you know, you're going to be willing to share with our listeners, have changed your life radically, and if I'm hearing you correctly, changed it for the better.
Well, it depends. Physically, it has been the worst.
Yeah.
It has been the worst. And I think that that's half of my problem because I had no idea that I had been suffering from, I mean, no one knew about, well, I didn't know about post-traumatic stress disorder. I didn't know about the spinal cord injury and didn't know about TBI, and especially if they were mild or not, I guess, life altering. Like I think of someone who has TBI, I think of the worst case scenarios. And so to have suffered all the things that I've suffered, I think that in my case, I just brushed it off because it was not, I could manage it. And I felt like injuries, if you could manage them, then you could keep it moving. Like that's our motto, was to keep it pushing. Mm-hmm. And so if I could keep it pushing, then I was able to, I don't know. I think that for me, I didn't want people to see me as weak, and everyone else around me was functioning and no one else was going through anything. And so I was having migraines, and when I wasn't taking ibuprofen, my back would just lock up and give out. And with post-traumatic stress, I was having nightmares and still have nightmares of September 11th and all of that stuff. And because it was not an everyday thing, and it was, most of them were chronic, and they could not be seen with the eye, I kind of brushed them to the side and kept living. And it wasn't until x-rays started coming in and then started to find tumors, and they did MRIs and all of these neurology tests and everything else, that I had to accept, because I didn't want to accept that. One of the things that happened with the Oprah Winfrey Show is that I refused to accept that I was homeless. Oh no, I'm fine, because I always looked at someone else and saw that they were worse off than me. So who am I to talk about me being homeless when I'm like, well, at least I have a car to live in. Well, at least I have a storage facility to change my clothes. Well, at least I have this. And so I always looked at, my grandmother used to always say, you know, there's always someone worse off than you. And so it kept me from feeling sorry for myself. And in not feeling sorry for myself, I kept living. And I just kind of kept running this race, and I found my life not to be a sprint, but a marathon. And if I just kept moving, I would get to the finish line.
You are very much a glass half full.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
My guest today is retired Air Force Sergeant and the currently reigning Ms. Maryland, Alicia Watkins. Although Alicia's time spent in the military and as a veteran has been marked with hardship and pain, she doesn't regret that chapter of her life. Even in the face of homelessness, a reality that a large population of our veterans face in America today, she found the tools to not only survive, but to come out even stronger. So you agreed to do a video diary for Oprah Winfrey about being female and homeless. Can you describe that video for anyone who hasn't seen it?
Absolutely. If I can I give you the backstory just a little bit?
Of course.
They had approached me and they had gotten in touch with me because the shelter that I was in at the time was being featured on World News with Diane Sawyer. Now, granted, at the time, I had no clue that it was World News with Diane Sawyer. I would have never agreed to it. But I thought it was a local news and, oh, okay, I'll tell people what's going on. And it turned out to be this huge thing. And so there was a mother. They only had 30-some rooms. And that was the problem. That's the problem that we have with homeless shelters. Women, there was only one. There was only one in the Southern California at the time for women veterans, or I had to have some substance abuse problem. And if I didn't have any substance abuse problem, then there was nowhere for myself as a female to be housed. So I got this shelter. I'd brought other homeless veterans to this shelter before. So I was very, it was very familiar to me. And once I saw that this was a mother and she had three children under the age of four and they were turning her away and she was on this was a weekend. So they were like, oh, when Monday comes, you can stay here on the couch for a couple of days. And then, you know, we're going to have to ask you to leave. And I talked to the director, Ms. Diane West at the time. And I asked her, I said, if I leave, will that mother get my room? And she was, no, you're not going to do it. No, don't do it. And I said, answer my question, please. Will she get that room? And she was, of course, she said yes. And it was huge because I remember walking to a U-Haul place and using the money that I really saved up to be my first month's rent, you know, in Los Angeles, the first and last month's rent. Well, it's probably everywhere, but first and last month's rent.
A lot of money.
You're right, a lot of money. So I'm like, oh, I finally kind of chunked because it wasn't like I had no money. I just didn't have enough money to sustain a living, an apartment in California of all places. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the street. They had wanted to reach out to the store. They had found out that, oh, she left and they had found out that story. And so they contacted me. I did have a phone and they had convinced me for a while, hey, please, no one is willing to step up and say, hey, this is what I'm going through. And it's very true because it's almost like you don't want to let everyone know that, hey, you may see me as a hero, but right now I'm homeless. Mm-hmm. And so they convinced me after like maybe a couple of months to do the video diary. And so they sent me this kit and it was a lot longer than what was featured on the Oprah Winfrey show. I mean, it was days upon days upon days. And they just kind of took the clips of that and put it into the video diary. And later on, this producer, Stacy Stravis, she actually came to Los Angeles and watched what a day in the life of me was. And I showed her, you know, with the whole how I did my nails at the time. I was trying to get a job. So I was trying to look presentable every single day. And this is what I wanted to show. I wanted to show people like, listen, I have money. but there is not enough money to sustain an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed them what I looked like. I showed them how I did my hair and showed them how I was able to, I don't want to say fool people, but hide it. And I thought that at any day the Air Force would pay me my money and we would, this would be a thing of the past. And weeks turned into months and it just kind of really got overwhelming. But it was an eye opener because I was not the only one, Dr. Tucker.
Mm.
I was one of many women. If you knew how many people who are dealing with this and who are going through this and hiding it, a lot of times in our family, we are the pride and joy. Oh my goodness, my daughter, my son, he's in the military and he's this and he's that. And to come to grips with the fact that you are in this place, this weak and vulnerable place, it does a lot and it crushes your pride and your self-esteem and your self-worth. And in my situation, I had always been a hard worker. And so I had 2 and 3 jobs. I had Hollywood friends. I had all these things going great for me until this happened. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people were asking, well, where's all your money from this? And where's all your money from that? And it was like, I was depleting my savings as I was not receiving my paycheck and everything else. And so this was not over a short period of time. This was over a year's worth of time.
And let me ask you a naive question. Why were they holding up your pay?
Well, it wasn't they were holding up my pay. I definitely want to explain this. So what happened was I was set to retire and I was placed on medical hold. And so once they placed me on involuntary medical hold, after my enlistment lapsed, the system really has no way of saying, hey, she's still in. Mm. She's on medical hold, because it sometimes people forget to do that. And the Air Force would be paying someone who did not reenlist.
I see.
So, and the people at Los Angeles Air Force Base, they told me that, hey, you're our guinea pig. We are learning this process with you.
And lucky you.
Thank you. I know. Right. And so a month would go by and the first would come and I would wait for the paycheck and all my utility bills and everything else. I had it automatically to withdraw from my account and I wouldn't get paid. Mm-hmm. And then they'd say, okay, what we're going to do, we're going to add some numbers. We're going to work some things. And then on the 15th, you're going to have your first month's pay and your second month pay.
Right.
And then your 15th would come and then I still wouldn't get paid. And so I really want to thank the Air Force Aid Society, because as much as they possibly could, they tried to stop the bleeding and it was just overwhelming. And I almost felt like, okay, I don't think you're really doing enough to help me. Some of the people in finance, I really didn't think they were doing enough to help me, but it was just one of those things where you fall through the cracks.
And if I can interject, it also sounds like, given your personality, you kept thinking, hey, I can hold on for a month.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then a month turned into 2 months and 6 months. And there you were.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there were two things that stood out for me having watched that video. And I have to say, all the more amazing, given the seriousness of your injuries. The first thing that I found is I thought, this woman is incredibly smart.
I was trying to tell people that.
Now, of course, I'm on the outside looking in, and whether or not it felt like you did, you really seemed to have a plan. But let me tell you what I mean by that. What I saw is you had a storage facility where you kept your belongings, a rental car that looked pretty great to me.
Yes.
This organized trunk that had these microwavable foods
yes.
that you were able to figure out you could heat them at the airport hotels where you could also use the restrooms.
Right.
And you maintained your gym membership where you would continue to work out and have a place to shower.
Right. Well, I didn't even maintain my gym membership. This was, I still had an ID card, so I was able to go onto the base. And the thing is that I did all this stuff before any of this happened. Mm-hmm. So me going to the gym to take a shower was something that I did every single day as an Air Force active duty person. So it, I wanted to, one of the things that we were taught, as far as our readiness training, is to blend in. And when you go overseas, you do not want to stand out. And I utilize that type of, I guess, intelligence to survive. And what people don't understand is that your money went to great use, meaning that I was a very intelligent person and I did not lose that intelligence just because life knocked me over. There are a lot of people that lost their homes in Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy, all these things. Life can knock you and pull the wool from over you, but you don't lose who you are. You don't lose what you know and your survival skills and your intelligence. And so I was just smart with it. And I just realized that, okay, people see what they want to see. So if they see a beautiful woman working out and taking a shower and everything else, you know, no one says, hey, what's going on? But I learned very quickly, if I wanted to blend in, I had to look a certain part. And my mom was a cosmetology teacher, grew up. She had her own business. She taught me everything I knew about everything. And those skills really played for me well when I was going through this, because I was able, without any money, and people ask, oh my goodness, where did you buy all this stuff? All of this stuff I had from my deployment. People were, after there's a 9/11 picture of me saluting in Afghanistan. After that happened, people were sending me all types of toiletries overseas. And I kept all those toiletries. I kept everything so that when the time came and when I was going through this, I had all those products. I had everything that I needed. And so all I would have to do is utilize my skills that I already had and products that I already had. And I was a hoarder, so I kept everything.
But I have to say, you're saying that, you know, people from Katrina, people who have had their homes foreclosed, yes, they've been knocked down. But, you know, I have to say, not everyone can get up, but you did.
I did. I'm a very religious person, and I believe that, I really believe that God never leaves us or forsakes us. And I really think that my religious beliefs played a factor into, there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. And I knew that the reason why God was taking me through this is because there are people out there that are suffering and they're not as strong as I was, and they're committing suicide by the truckloads. Mm-hmm. And the reason why there are more than three times the amount of soldiers and warriors that have committed suicide is because we are surrounded by a world that does not understand us, and they would rather end it all. And my focus was to prevent that from happening. But I believe that it was kind of like on the job training. I'm so happy I went through this, because I was such a, I don't want to say, I was just a materialistic person, meaning that I felt that if I had achieved a car, a house, you know, all these things, and that meant I did something with my life. And it wasn't until all that was taken away that I realized I'm somebody without all those materialistic things, and life can happen. And what you have left is who you are. And so I came into this world with nothing. I would leave with nothing. But what I did in the between time is what really mattered. And what I wanted to do is save hurting people.
I'm Dr. Linda Tucker, in conversation with Alicia Watkins, and frankly, I can't help but think that it feels like this woman has lived three lifetimes. I don't feel like I'm stretching it too far to say that the depths of desperation that she has experienced are more than most of us can even imagine. Her experience of homelessness debunks many common misperceptions of the homeless population and is a profound reminder that everyone has a story behind their eyes. Alicia's story in particular is a strong testament to how a reservoir of faith and resourcefulness can be a saving grace even in the darkest of times. So you had your faith, you had your strength, what you described as your tenacity, but you know, here's what I also thought. Here's a woman who, and again, from the outside looking in, never lost her dignity.
I cannot wait to be on a platform, but talk to people about this. Dr. Tucker, I stand 6 feet in heels. I was a model. I model for the Air Force. I model for the DOD. You can't see in the video, but I have a God-given body. There were people who said, listen, why don't you just go and find you a nice boyfriend and he'll take care of you. There were people who said, hey, why don't you use what you got to get what you want? There were women that were with me who were giving themselves a prostitution, who were in the strip club doing all types of things that diminished their self-esteem and their self-worth. And I was offered a house and a car and everything else, if I would just become someone's side piece or someone's girlfriend. And the one thing that I refute that people cannot say is that I did not lose my dignity and was hard. I cried so many times because it was so hard to have a way out and to not utilize the superficial and the work what you got to get what you want type of mentality. And I'm so glad that now I can present myself to my future husband as someone that doesn't have all these skeletons in the closet about my nights where I walk the streets or utilize the pole. But at the same time, I always thought people who went into prostitution and went into stripping, oh my goodness, I can't believe that. But I was at that place. I understand, and I will never in my life judge someone who does that because I have been there. And even though I was able to withstand the pressure to do it, I now have compassion for them because I know that life you can be so desperate that that's all you have left to really sell.
Wow. I hope you get that pulpit. I really do. I'll be sitting in the front row.
Because I don't think people understand. And people really, really beat me up. I know you can't see all the comments because I think they took them down. But people be...
I did see some of those comments and I could hardly believe them.
Yes, her priorities are all what? If she hadn't spent all her money, doing her hair and doing her nails, she could have gotten a job. And I can't, and it hurts, and it still hurts to this day. But I believe that all that's doing is setting me up so that when I do tell my story, and I've taken a lie detector test to prove that the Air Force was the reason why I was homeless. And I'll send that to you too, because people don't believe I am such a endangered species in this world that people don't believe. I'm like the unicorn, that they don't believe that there is someone in this world that values are so embedded into who they are that nothing that I go through will, I guess, erase them. I refuse to lower my dignity because when it's all said and done, when I'm old and gray, the only person that I will see in the mirror is me. And
yes.
I want to be proud of who I saw in that mirror. And I would never have been proud if I gave my body up or if I'd stole to get to get the things that I needed or hustled or took my anger out or I never in my life smoked. I've never tasted alcohol, never. I've never been on any substance abuse or anything else. And I know that half of that is the grace of God, but I was determined because I knew from an early age that I was not here for myself. I did not suffer for myself. I suffered for all the other people that will come behind me and are going through it, but they don't have the courage to get up on Oprah and be humiliated and tell people all that other stuff and be bullied and to be harassed the way I was about what I chose to do. But if I wasn't, and I realized another thing, I don't garner sympathy. I realized that the way I looked, and it helps now because I'm a beauty queen, but the way I look, people have to feel sorry for you to help you. And no one is going to feel sorry for a size 2, 5'10" beauty queen.
Wow. Size 2?
I know. But I realized that early on. And so I was not in a position where I was going to garner everyone's sympathy. And I was never going to be someone who was asking for money. I saved all my money and I pulled myself up and got not a dime of public aid from anyone because I knew what I was facing. And I know how this world thinks. And I talked to other veterans who were going through the same thing I was going through. And I realized I had a game plan for this. And I refused to allow my dignity or compromise who I was to get over this.
Good for you. Even Oprah asked you a question on her show, which was, why do you look so good?
Yes.
And I thought, well, okay, Oprah usually seems to know what others might be wondering. So I'm guessing that's why she asked.
Absolutely. And I think that I really do think if I hadn't looked, the anomaly is the fact that, hey, you know, we can't understand her. I think if they were able to categorize me in a homeless box, like, okay, this is the homeless guy that was drinking and lost his family, or this is the homeless woman who spent her money the wrong way and now she put herself in a situation. They did not realize that I was someone who was taught to survive. I am a survivor. And because I am a survivor, I am going to survive everything, which means homelessness. And I pride myself because I look better when I was homeless than I did before I was. And it was because I was so determined to fit in. And I realized that I had a different approach to homelessness than most people. I realized that I am a rare person, but I also realized that I had overcome so many things that being homeless was nothing. Mm-hmm. I've gone through so much stuff that you mean to tell me that all of a sudden now I'm going to break this little thing. You take away my house, you take away my car, and now I'm going to break. Now over this little thing is going to crush me. No, it will strengthen me. And people are still trying to figure me out. And I think veterans are they can be the worst in saying, well, why didn't you just do your GI Bill? Well, why didn't you do this? Well, why didn't you get paid? And people don't understand that anytime that there is a human run system, there will be human errors. And I was just one of them. And I kind of live to tell the story, but there are many people who have gone through far more worse things than I have, but they decided to end their life than to deal with it. And that's what I want to stop. And that's why God had me go through this so that I could pull someone else up.
Well, you clearly have an inner strength that shines through and are a leader. And I think that I would wish you all of the best in getting people to follow what it is you're saying. But I'm hearing it hasn't been easy because it almost sounds as if you've been bullied online.
Absolutely. And I love my fiance so much. He's like, why do you care what they think? You know what you're going through. And I wish that I had his sense of self-assurance, but I cannot believe that other veterans are the source of so much pain. And a lot of them were like, wait a minute, I saw you in 2009 and you looked fine. Okay. I saw you saw what I wanted you to see when I wanted you to see it. So it's hard for people to kind of get over that. But veterans, in my experience, I don't know if with other veterans they are well receptive to, but they're the worst to me. They treat me the worst. Mm-hmm. I've never in my life seen so much bullying. But what that does is kind of give me, people don't realize there's bullying in the military all the time. But what that does is give me another platform. Now I understand what it's like for young girls and young men to be in school and to be bullied. Because I didn't get bullied in high school. I was one of the popular kids and I was voted class clown. So now that I'm an adult and I'm over almost 30 something years old, I'm now experiencing bullying as a child. And I'm like, wow. But it just, all life's trials do is just give me a bigger platform to help more people. So bring it on.
What's skewed is you're being bullied for being able to survive homelessness without losing your dignity and doing it in, from again, what I see as a very creative and ingenious way of having done it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. I doubt if they'll have a homeless hall of fame, but I'm pretty sure that I'm in it. And I had resources that there are more people who are in my bracket than there are the ones that we see in living in tents and doing all that other stuff. There are so many women that because I know the game, that I've asked them, okay, well, where are you living? And they broke down and told me that they were homeless. And I've helped them and got them to a place. I should let you listen to some of the voicemails that I have from some of the people that I've helped. But honestly, I'm just happy to have gone through it. And God picked the right person to go through it because I'm strong enough to deal with the bullying. I'm strong enough to deal with everything or anything that comes my way. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad that he picked me. And he picked me because he knew that I could handle it and not lose my dignity and not do some things that I will regret for the rest of my life. And I'm proud of myself. If no one else is proud of me, if no one else understands why I did what I did, I understand. And God understands.
And those are the two most important people in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now I care what my fiance thinks.
I'm Dr. Linda Tucker, and today my guest is the strong, resilient, and empathic Alicia Watkins. Clearly, our challenges shape us if we will only take the time to listen what's being broken open inside of us. But it often takes another set of eyes to see the beauty appearing before we can see it for ourselves. Call it grace, serendipity, human kindness, or the universe knowing exactly what Alicia needed. But her path led her to a person who would help her pick up the pieces and help her make sense of the pain that she had been carrying. Little did she know at the time that she would eventually become a catalyst for healing in the lives of others. So how did you find your way to Monty Roberts and his ranch?
I was on this site for post-traumatic stress disorder and the therapy for that. And there was a lady, Brittany Peterson, she had posted something about a equine therapy camp, but it was in California. And the show had just aired. I just been sent home by a family friend and pastor, and there was no way that I could get there. And Happy Thoughts International, it's a charity, and they found a way to get me American Airlines flight, and Marriott paid for my hotel, and I was able to come. But when I came, I was still in that backlash from all the people who had beat me up for not looking homeless or everything else. So I just got finished the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I was really dealing with everything that was going on. And so I had sunglasses on, I had a hoodie on, I wouldn't talk to anybody. I was very
protective.
Yes, very protective. I didn't want to talk to any of these people, but I just wanted to kind of see. And I knew that there was something different about this. And I met Monty, and he didn't know who I was. And I stood in the back, and I had everything on, and I wasn't going to open up to anyone because I felt I opened up to the entire world, and the world had rejected me. Mm. And so I was living with that rejection. And I met him, and he had saw the glasses, and he had innocently said, when you out with the horses, you take off the sunglasses because the horses respond to our eye contact. And what he didn't know is that I was crying underneath the glasses because what he was saying was so profound and was so, it was like,
he spoke to you.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yes. And here I am, a city girl. I'd never been on a horse before, and it was immediate chemistry. And he would kind of get me to talk and get me to communicate. And it turned into one of the, you know, one of those people that meet you, you meet and you know that they are a life changer. He has changed my life. I don't think that I would be where I am today without equine therapy, because I was dealing with so much anger from the rejection that I felt from a country that I'd given my life to serve. And I found hope in humanity. And, you know, we've been everywhere together, and I really want to make sure that his program lives on after both of us are long gone. And he's just an amazing man, and he is genuine.
I couldn't agree with you more. I really admire Monty Roberts and what he's doing.
Right. And it was genuine. He didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who he was. And it was just a very sincere relationship. And I just, every time I see him, it's like, I get emotional because he's responsible for, I didn't want to be on pills. I hadn't been seen by a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I did not want that.
We're really okay.
I know you are. That I'm taking psychology, so it's hilarious now. But for me, I just did not want to spend my life on medications for depression. And I knew that there was a better way. And I wanted to find a more holistic way of dealing with this, because in my community, we don't have access, or we didn't have access to psychologists and everything else. And if I found a way to help heal the pain of life in this area, then I knew that I could translate that into other areas and other people and in other situations.
You know, I think your instincts were right on. I personally agree with everything that you just said. I really don't recommend medication. Well, first of all, I'm a PhD. I can't, but I can certainly recommend people to MDs.
Right.
And I think it does people sometimes a disservice to use a pill instead of learning how to use your inner strength.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have severe insomnia. So I usually go about 3 days without sleeping if I wasn't medicated. And so I remember one point in my life, and it was near the September 11th anniversary. And I always get very antsy during that time. And I remember when I was on Ambien, like 2000 and I think 8 or 9. I don't remember. But I remember panicking because I could not find my pills. And I looked at myself and I did not like how nervous I got in something so simple as falling asleep and needing assistance to fall asleep. Now, my views about that have changed throughout the years, but at the time when I went to Monty, I wanted another way. I wanted to find a way to deal with life without medication. And medication does have its advantages. And I'm not doubting that in any way. But for me, I still wanted to have an option. And horse therapy and his program gave me an option.
I also want to ask you about the Wounded Warriors Project. And I know that Harvard was, you know, your choice because you wanted to work with wounded veterans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember being in Walter Reed. I was going through physical therapy and I met some of the parents and family members of people who were in the ICU and who were in the Ward 57 at Walter Reed Bethesda. And she was talking about how the only hope that they had was Harvard University. And she had given up everything. She had risked her house and risked everything. And she says that they have the number one healthcare and they're the most innovative team of doctors in the United States and quite possibly the world. And so it just, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, wow. At the time I always was surrounded by the best. I mean, I learned how to speak on a talk show on the number one stage in America. Oprah Winfrey. and then I got taught how to ride horses by the Michael Jordan of horses, Monty Robbins.
The real horse whisperer.
And so what better college to attend than the number one?
Yeah.
College? And so it was just kind of I'm joking when I say that, but I really wanted to be on the cutting edge of technology and medicine and psychology and everything. And this was one of those colleges that really spoke to me. And the fact that it started off as a Christian school really, I'm like, okay, this is divine. I love it. And it was the oldest institution. I was like, yes, this is for me. And I really wanted to show people, listen, there's nothing that you cannot overcome if you put your mind to it.
But Alicia, I have to slow you down because I happen to know that their acceptance rate is hovering somewhere around 5%, which means that out of nearly 38,000 applicants, very, very few get in, and yet you did.
Well, you know what? And see, this is what I wanted to tell people that they keep. I started off by the summer school and I said, well, if I could just get through this tiny semester, then I would know, because I didn't know whether or not I was going to pass or fail. I had one thing about me that people don't know is I know how to write. That's the one thing that no one can take from me. I've always been an accomplished author and writer. And I had a lot of battles that I overcame. And I was able to display those and present those in a way that I believe that set me apart from all the other candidates. I was Black, I was a woman, I was disabled, and I was a veteran. So I was all four. Just one would get you a small business loan. And I was all four. And when someone told me that, I was like, wow, I can utilize this to say, hey, not only am I a veteran, I'm a disabled veteran, I'm a female veteran, and I'm a minority. And those are obstacles to overcome in their own right. And so I think I threw everything at the wall. Mm-hmm. I just threw everything. Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly you have a way of turning lemons into lemonade. I think you could teach that class.
Absolutely. Make the lemon pie. The lemon pie. I mean, just everything.
So what is the Wounded Warriors Project and how can people help?
Well, the Wounded Warrior Project is a organization whose mission is to treat wounded warriors who have served since 9/11. And they do a variety of different services. Well, they give a variety of different services. They help with transition homes. They help you in the with your VA claims. They have the greatest events ever. I mean, they are the number one. And their goal is focused on combat veterans and wounded warriors, which kind of separates them from the other missions that there is. And so being a part of this organization has really keep my head on straight, because when you're in the Wounded Warrior Project, you have people who have lost limbs. I remember one of my friends is a quadruple amputee. I have people who have severe life injuries. And when I look at them and when I'm surrounded by them, I never feel sorry for myself. I say, oh, I have TBI, but it's manageable. There are measures that I can put into place. It takes me a longer time to do things, but I'm able to function. And the Wounded Warrior Project really has been the only place that I feel accepted. And I don't feel like I'm the black sheep. Mm-hmm. And so I love it. And most people, it's so funny because when we go to these Wounded Warrior events, they'll say, oh, ma'am, the spouses are over here. And it's so funny. I'm like, oh, I'm the spouse. No, I'm a warrior. And people always assume that I am a spokesperson for the organization and not a Wounded Warrior myself.
Well, they're prescient. They knew you would be a spokesperson for this organization.
Exactly. But I've met the founders of the organization, and they're amazing people. And I do plan to start my own, I guess, I don't want to say chapter, but really learn from them. And I want to study how they've made this thing work so that when I am full time into the Need Foundation, that I know what to do and what not to do. And they're a bunch of lawyers, so they really help you. They're really good. They're really good at that. But it's an amazing organization, and they do great things for wounded warriors. And they really have helped me take my mind off of all that I've gone through.
I would like to end with giving our listeners, hopefully there's a veteran who's listening, the Veterans Crisis Line, which is open 24/7, and they can be reached at 800-273-8255. Alicia Watkins, it has truly been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Tucker. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
You think you got the best of me? Think you've had the last laugh? Bet you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down? Think that I'll come running back? Baby, you don't know me, 'cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller.
Challenge Your Thinking podcast with Dr. Linda Tucker. If you would like more information about your host, please look for her at www.drlindatucker.com. Thank you.